Hello, I'm Michael Heyman, and you're listening to Changemakers. Now, my guest today is the fashion designer Edeline Lee. Launching her eponymous label in 2014, she's overseen the growth of a brand that has been worn by stars from Taylor Swift and Solange Knowles to Keira Knightley and Anne Hathaway. She's known for her immersive and performative shows at London Fashion Week, and this year was no exception when it went virtual. She describes her brand of fashion as intelligent craftsmanship, clothes with meaning and depth. And today's story is very much about that search for meaning and how you find it. Edeline, welcome to Changemakers. Absolute pleasure to have you on the show.
Hi, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Oh, pleasure. Abby, I loved your London Fashion Week immersive video, and we'll get on to that. But what I'd like to start with is this idea about fashion and meaning. You've railed against a culture of consumerism, you know, filling the never-ending hole, and how that makes you insecure and disempowering, especially for women. Mm-hmm. Give us a sense of what does it mean, therefore, in terms of the relationship between meaning and the work that you do in the higher end of fashion?
Well, I am a fashion designer, so obviously I find that there's meaning in the work that I do. And I think that clothes represent it represents so much about your identity. Women and men, they project their identity through clothing. The things that you wear are symbols in a way for what you stand for, who you are, how you want to be seen, and how you see yourself. And so I think clothes they're such an intimate thing as well. Everyone wears them on their body. They feel them next to their skin. Everyone has a relationship with their clothing and has an opinion about it. And also, because of the system that we have, it represents what's happening right now in this very moment in the zeitgeist.
And I mean, obviously, we're living in a world of lockdown, a world of COVID-19. We're seeing things like tracksuit bottoms, flying off the shelves. Has our relationship with style and fashion changed during lockdown from your perspective?
I think absolutely. It's a wholesale shift in our environment. We're traveling less. We're traveling more selectively when we do. A lot of us are spending time at home, working from home. Of course, it's changing everything. Having said that, the women who are wearing my clothes are still doing things. You know, they're still on the screen, you know, making ideas and trying to get them published or out there into the world. And so I think my women still need clothes, you know, and you can't wear sweatpants forever. So,
well, I mean, but also I suppose this on that point about forever is that we want to express ourselves. And one of my past guests, Anne Seba, the historian, she wrote about the women of Paris in the lockdown. And she spoke about how important, on this point about meaning, fashion was as an act of rebellion, an act of self-affirmation. Do you sort of get a sense that we may well be going through stages in our relationship with a global pandemic and the effects of lockdown? I mean, do you think that we may well move into a world where our individualism, our ability to express ourselves, is going to become more important?
I mean, I think it's always been important, but I definitely think we're on the tipping edge of a change here. Everyone, businesses and communities, we've all had to figure out schools. We've all had to figure out different ways to communicate and connect and present ourselves. So this is an exciting time, actually, as a creative. You know, you're trying, it's the same thing with Fashion Week. You're trying to envision a different way of doing things. And that, of course, is difficult, but it's also an interesting challenge.
I mean, let's talk about that. I mean, we're going to put your London Fashion Week virtual show, your video, we're going to put that with your lockdown notes on this episode, or just go straight to your website, because it is phenomenal. I mean, tell us a little bit about the video. I mean, I loved watching it, I have to tell you.
We always do quite immersive shows at Fashion Week. And this one, I felt maybe it'd be nice to do something that is about how we feel in this time. So we had just come out of a lockdown in London. The video is only 2 minutes long, but it's the same woman repetitively doing all these things locked in a room.
Yes, I was going to say, set the scene for us, this sort of stripped back room, this sort of, you know, the fireplace, wonderful.
It's a stripped back room, and she's sleeping, she's eating, she's cleaning, it's a little bit anxious, she's all alone, she's confronting her solitude, she's confronting herself, you know, in many forms, and she layers on top of each other. And I just wanted to kind of, you know, in a lighthearted way, say this is how we're feeling right now. Mm.
I mean, I think for anyone that thinks that, you know, the virtual world struggles to convey a sense of emotion, I mean, I think your video is quite a riposte to that in terms of just in 2 minutes. I mean, you find yourself feeling trapped, locked down, freed, the whole thing is, I mean, and I suppose that's very much your brand. You want to push boundaries. And of course, I suppose looking at your career here, it all makes sense. But if we go back to the beginning of your career, your first fashion memory, tell us about this pair of shorts that sticks out in your mind as your first design triumph or disaster. Did we treat those two imposters just the same?
It was definitely a disaster, but it was home economics class. I grew up in Canada, so I was learning how to sew, and I made a pair of window pane checked shorts. And I remember it quite clearly. I remember them quite clearly. But it was, you know, it was where I was introduced to the making of something, and where I fell in love with it.
Mm. What was it about the making that you fell in love with? Because obviously it's a very physical yeah. career, isn't it? Sort of the fabrics and cuts. And I mean,
yeah.
what gave you the bug? What got you interested?
It's actually unbelievably difficult. You have different fabrics every time. They react differently. It's like a sculptural material. You have the limits of the human body. You have the limits of how, you know, women feel about their bodies, how, you know, all of these things that we've spoken about already, how they present themselves. And then you have, as I was saying, the zeitgeist. So you need to be present in the now, you know, saying something. And you need to kind of accommodate all of these limitations and technically be able to stitch this thing together in a way that it will last, you know. And so I find it endlessly challenging.
I mean, I want to know that. I mean, what were the signals? Because I mean, I've got two young daughters, 9 and 7, and I endlessly wonder what they're going to do. Actually, I think one of them could be a great fashion creative, and the other one's very expressive. And I'm just sort of wondering, what were the signals of the young Edeline in terms of your personality that kind of, if you were to look at the breadcrumb trail that gets you to today, what were the earliest signals?
I think at that time I was quite shy as a child. I was quiet, and I discovered that fashion equals power. You know, if you wear a pair of matching socks to your shorts, people notice, and that, you know, you can almost, you know, a sense of taste is something that, you know, that people notice.
So this was expression, the power of expression.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, I mean, that was the first instinct, I think. And then there's the aesthetics, obviously. You know, it's a beautiful craft.
And people know you for the aesthetics. I mean, that is one of the, you know, when you read the pieces, I mean, you are seen as just, you know, however you do it, it's just one of those things. It just all seems to come together. I mean, is that something, I mean, obviously you went to Central St. Martin's to learn, but mm-hmm. but do you think there is something more, do you just have to be born with this, or can you actually learn it, do you think, in terms of that style?
I mean, you know what they always say about 99% sweat, and that's definitely the case in fashion. You have to work
incredibly hard.
So, yeah, incredibly hard. It's not, you know, we change our products season after season. So it's not like you design a toothbrush and then sell it for 30 years. You know, it's you have to continue changing along with the people who are wearing it, and so yes, it's a skill. It's definitely something you can practice.
I mean, you worked and were trained with world-renowned designers like John Galliano, Alexander McQueen. Tell us a little bit about that. What was it like working with some of the greats?
That era in fashion was so interesting because it was a storytelling. A narrative era, and I still get inspired by that in my work today. Mm. It wasn't just clothes; they were telling stories, and they were capturing their audience with that. And I think, obviously, aside from the great skill that both of them have as designers or had as designers. So I think that's something that I try to play with, and it maybe in a different way for our time now, but that's something I play with all the time.
Because I would say storytelling is a very important part of your work. I mean, do you think that's now an exception rather than the rule? I mean, have designers on the whole, have they lost that art of storytelling, you know, the journey, if you will?
You have different types of designers and different approaches, but that particular era was strong for that. I think now that perhaps everyone's going to be moving digitally, maybe we'll see more of it, because, you know, a runway show relies on a lot of factors that you can't kind of bring into a film, you know. So there's the energy in the air and the atmosphere of the people and all the, you know, people in the front row and all of that, you know. So the speed of the girls that are walking and the wind that blows against your face, you know, there's a lot of things that can bring up the energy and the adrenaline in the room, which in a film is a little bit different.
So the virtual experience may well play in the favor of the storytellers.
Maybe, I think so, because it's that much harder to reach people now. We need to communicate and we need to reach our woman. And, you know, a story is one of the, I guess, the most profound and kind of earliest ways that human beings have connected to one another.
Well, I mean, enduring. I mean, and you yourself have talked about playing the long game in terms of your career and indeed your label. Tell us a little bit about what does it mean to play the long game in something that is so seasonal, something that changes so rapidly in terms of styles and tastes.
I feel like as I matured in this industry, I have seen people come and go very quickly. It's a very difficult industry. I think when I say playing the long game, I don't intend my clothes to last only one season. I'm not that type of designer. I hope that they last in women's wardrobes for a much, much longer time. I constantly actually have women coming back to my studio and we alter and fix clothes that we sold to them years ago, you know. So there's that aspect of it. But also as a businesswoman, I think I want a sustainable business for my team and for, you know, this is my lifestyle as well. You know, it's hard work. So I don't want it to be kind of something, you know, the trend of the moment.
I suppose that is also underpinned by a view about the future and the way that mm-hmm. Women of the future are going to dress. You've talked about future woman mm-hmm. as an idea. I mean, tell us more.
Yes, when people ask, as a designer, you are asked all the time, who is your muse? Who are you aspiring to dress? And I made up this term, future lady, which is an idea of what is a lady in the future? You know, aside from the past definition of it, you know, someone who is graceful and dignified and powerful and intelligent and, you know, and what am I aspiring to be? What do my, you know, who are the women that I'm actually dressing? Which sometimes is at odds with what you see in the industry, what you see in magazines. You know, the real women that are wearing my clothes as a designer are powerful women, and they are, you know, they're not, you know, young girls. So I think about that when I design.
I mean, one of those fans is Baroness Helena Morrissey, who has been a guest on this show. And you spoke with her about female entrepreneurs and redefining power, because it's not just a fashion statement, I guess. It's there's something else at play here. Tell us a little bit more about that.
I think gender politics is something I've always been interested in. I studied sociology actually when I was young, and I think that obviously in our day and age, power for women as a topic has been changing. You know, feminism is something that's been going on for decades and been through many cycles. I think that at the moment, I look around me and I don't see how women in the future, my kind of woman in the future, are going to dress. I don't think it's addressed, basically. So that's the challenge that I'm trying to achieve, because, you know, there is a difference between power. I mean, as you know, I did a show with Mary Beard, and that was one where Dame Helena Morrissey was part of that show as well, and Anne Seba. Power is just something that we have. I don't think we have a grasp of what that looks like, a feminine power.
Because I mean, that's I guess what I was driving at: feminine power, and the degree to which fashion releases it and doesn't mm-hmm. trap it.
Mm-hmm. I think, as a maker, I obviously put love and care into the clothes that we make, and I care about how it feels and how it fits and how it makes the woman feel. So that's one aspect of it, is the spirit that you put into the clothes. But then it's also, how does it suit this woman's life? How, you know, when they are up front speaking, wearing my dresses, do they, you know, are they at the limits of their, you know, the heights of their power? And that's, it's what the objective that I'm trying to serve.
Do you get a sense that in this year where, I mean, we've mentioned the pandemic, but it's also a year of major social change. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen mm-hmm. the Black Lives Matter marches. Mm-hmm. We've seen huge concerns about climate change. When you look at periods in the past where big issues become very, very conscious issues for the world, mm-hmm. you quite often see a big change in style and the way that people express themselves during those periods. Have you picked up on how all of this is going to affect how you think about fashion for the future?
It's all happening right now, which is kind of exciting. You see it in the fashion industry right now. You see kind of aggressive, dystopian future, kind of that type of imagery coming out. I think what my vision is a bit lighter, and it's more feminine, and it's, you know, I'm looking for beauty right now. So that was a bit like how the film was as well this season. Mm. There's a light side to this as well, and there's a way that we can we will be able to live our potential again, you know, or within these circumstances, and still do it in a beautiful way. It's actually happening as we speak. I feel that we're going through a massive shift in our society.
Mm. Back to Anne for a moment. But I mean, the thing that she would say, I'm sure, was that when the lockdown for the women of Paris ended, it led to this exuberance of the new look, that actually everything was a very, very different change. I mean, I think it's exciting to think about the moment where things do move on from the kind of the world we're living in right now, and how we will creatively express ourselves in that era.
It's so true. Like during the period of the new look, or during wartime, obviously there were all these restrictions, but women also started working, in munitions factories, and they took on jobs outside of the home for the first time. There was a wholesale shift in society at that point. Here during the pandemic, you read in the news about, you know, things going a little bit backwards for women that way. Working from home with children, it's harder for women often. It's definitely interesting. And obviously, everything is temporary, and this will change. But this is very much a time when I think all creatives need to be really alert, because we're the ones that are visualizing it for people.
And I suppose you're visualizing it, but I suppose you also need to embody the values of it. And when you mm-hmm. when you hear this phrase of, you know, business is a force for good, you look at issues like sustainability, fashion finds itself on this front line between kind of, you know, fast fashion, disposable fashion, and those that see a responsibility in terms of the resources of the planet. Take the story forward for us.
Well, I think the idea of fast fashion is it's something that's happened in the past couple of generations. It's very recent. The globalization, the production of fashion all around the world, and the pieces coming together. I think what I do is almost like work like a dressmaker. We're in London. We make everything here, and we make it all by hand. And, you know, we only make what we get and what gets ordered. So we're reverting back to, this is the way clothes have been for centuries. We see our clients one by one and we build a wardrobe with them and we change things from season after season. We add a little bit more, or, you know, sell them a top to wear with a skirt they bought last time. I think this for me has been more of a personal choice with how I want to live my life and what the enjoyment I get out of being a designer. But I think this is actually the direction the world's moving in, or it should be moving in, because it's not sustainable, the fast fashion consumption thing.
But I suppose that the thing, I mean, people that might be listening say, well, it's fine if you're buying very expensive pieces and you can afford to do that. A lot of what fast fashion is doing is it's basically fulfilling the needs in an austerity climate. Similarly, a lot of people listening will say, well, you know, actually you need to make this exciting as well. It's not just about being responsible. I mean, Tristram Stewart, the Toast Ale founder, he said to me, if you want to change the world, you have to throw a better party than those that are destroying it. Hasn't sustainable fashion got to become a really exciting choice as well as a responsible choice?
Of course. And there's a lot of designers approaching it from different angles right now. And the fact of the matter is, if you pay people properly to make your clothes, then they will cost more, you know, and if people are being paid fairly to do it, then it will cost more. If design is good, it will cost more as well. And also hopefully it'll last longer. So I think that we have survived for generations with women, you know, buying one dress for the season and then altering their coat from last season and a new hat, you know, that used to be the way. And I think, and women were endlessly creative with that, you know? So I think that, perhaps, you know, yes, it costs more, but it costs more for a reason. There's a problem if you're paying too little, which if you really look under that leaf or that cover of that book, perhaps you would not like what you see, you know? So, you know, clothes are made by hand. They're made by, it takes time. You know, someone has to stitch it.
And I suppose that we've got to be, you know, responsive to that time. But also, I mean, using the time I've got with you, I mean, I think about you as, you know, there's one part of you which is the fashion designer, one part of you which is the creative spirit, but there's also one part of you which is the entrepreneur. Because I mean, you know, when we had the briefing for this conversation, I mean, you often talk about building a business from the kitchen table. Well, that was you, and I could see your team and so much going on. And, you know, your tip for life that accompanies this episode is fear is not an option, which not only sounds like the verse of an Eminem song that I remember, but I think it was much more impolite, but it's also a very entrepreneurial view of the world, which is that you have to confront your fear. You have to own it. I mean, how do you do that? What's your kind of coping mechanism?
You know, it's everything is one. I mean, maybe this is a boring answer, but everything is one small step at a time. And I think when you fear is a really wasted emotion most of the time, unless a bus is running at you, you know, really like the fear of putting your things out there, putting your name out there, attaching your name to a project, working hard at doing something. All of these things are wasted fears, I think. And I found for myself personally, when I surpassed that, things started happening.
So fear can be a motivator for you as well.
I think it's initially you have to just blindly ignore it and try, and then you realize it's not that scary anymore. It's just, yeah.
And we are living through it. I mean, in relative terms, the experience of 2020 is a scary year from the point of view of health, the point of view of economically. Tell us how you're coping with it, and what would your advice be?
I mean, the thing is, you know, you wear masks, you be careful, you you know, you take care of your friends and your family around you and your employees, and then you know, it's also the onus is on right now to make beautiful things, to do beautiful things, because we need to counteract all this ugliness in the world, I think. So I think it's a time for us to kind of, you know, get involved, you know, get political, you know, do what you're good at, basically.
Do what you're good at. Well, I think I have to do what I'm good at, which is, unfortunately, I have to end this wonderful episode of Changemakers Headline. Thank you so much for joining me. And there we heard it. Use your fear and do beautiful things. What an inspiring message to close the show. And my thanks go to Edeline Lee, a designer using the power of fashion to provide meaning in uncertain times. And her message is this: play the long game. And what's more, do it your way. Join me next time for Changemakers. Subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Audioboom, or wherever else you get your podcasts. And if you've enjoyed it, why not give us a rating? Changemakers, find your mission.